Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast, presented by the FTN Network, breaking down NFL action with the info you need to crush your fantasy leagues.
All right, everybody, welcome back for episode 4 of the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. Y'all knew who it is, man. It's your boy Ray G, joined, as always, by my man, my partner in crime, my brother from another mother, Josh Mother Effin' Larkey, in the building. We had the NFL draft this weekend, Josh. I'm trying to get it back together, man. It was a long weekend. I know you streamed, night one and day one and day two of the draft, and kind of took that day three off. But we had a lot of players drafted that we were going to talk about and dive into today. So just wanted to check on you, make sure you're here, make sure you're okay and ready. Make sure that you're ready to eat some crow. I think we're both going to eat a little crow on this damn mock that we had pre-NFL draft. What a wild weekend, man. I'm just ready for you to hit me over the head, talk about some of these quarterbacks that I had high, and then figure out how we embrace this variance and move on. How do we react? How do we value these players? So how are you, my friend? How are you doing? How was your weekend?
Ray, you know what? Yesterday, exhausted. Today, we're back in the swing of it. It's a Tuesday night. We're recording, and I'm pretty excited for this since we have, I think probably to the benefit of people listening, not compared notes. We have a show sheet, and I think it's going to be really fun to just kind of fire off some takes, figure out what our gut reactions are. I know you were streaming during the draft. You've been working on your rookie rankings, and I think this is kind of what the people want. They want us to have some agreement, some debate, just kind of talk through how we logically think about these landing spots, the draft. I mean, for a draft where there was the lack of the blue chip prospect, holy bejesus, was that thing fun. I mean, what an action-packed first round, second round, third round, so many trades. So yeah, I think we just dive right in and get to talking about it.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it. Where you want to take this thing, Larky?
Oh, you know what? This is going to be a weekly thing. Producer in my ear, we've got some specials.
Go ahead.
Promo code Larky, LARKY. Promo code Larky, 20% off any package at FTN. Fantasy daily bets. You want Jeff's rookie rankings? You want my rookie rankings? You want my post-draft best ball rankings, which are coming very soon? Do you want to unlock all of the paywalled articles, like my top 50 rookies with a full paragraph about every single rookie? You want all that content? Well, promo code Larky, LARKY, Larky. 20% off. All right, Ray, the producer, they're satisfied. Now let's just start right off at the top. People are thinking about their rookie drafts. Maybe they're salivating about the 101. Maybe they're not. Breece Hall, he's the 101, right?
Yes, we don't need to spend a ton of time on that. I mean, again, I don't care if he was drafted by the New Orleans Breakers of the USFL. He would be 101 in single quarterback super flex. He is the 101 premium draft capital, ridiculous profile, just easy smash. Don't get cute. Don't be silly. Don't get cute. It's Breece Hall.
All right. We are one for one. I have him in tier 1A all alone. Cool. Let's move on now. So I know that some people, like, they didn't love the Breece Hall landing spot. I mean, I don't think either of us were like obsessed with like, oh, please go to the Jets and like ruin Michael Carter, but also have an established third down back there. But I mean, positional scarcity with the running backs up top, the prospect profile is pretty fucking good. So what landing spots did you like? Since, I mean, Breece Hall, not the best, but like he's still 101. So who is potentially elevated for you after the draft or during your watching and you go, oh yeah, that let me note this down. This is year one opportunity or something like that.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of landing spots that we were all hopeful for, and luckily and fortunately we did get some talented players to hit those landing spots. But for me, when I'm thinking about immediate opportunity and what the outlook for this potential player can be, and it's not even just player, it's multiple players at this point, but the Atlanta Falcons, I'm just thinking about opportunity. Bad team, probably going to be down quite a bit, and the offense is just going to try to throw, try to run. So I think the Falcons, you know, Drake London fit in there. Love that for him. You know, hopefully he can beat out Auden Tate and Olamide Zaccheaus and be the primary target leader in that offense along with Kyle Pitts. That should be a lot of fun. And, you know, Tyler Allgeier landed there as well, which they released Mike Davis, and all he has to do is beat out Quadre Olison to be, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson is there and he's still going to get his, but you know, he'll be on the field on third down situations, but Tyler Allgeier, immediate opportunity to at least play year one. So loving that landing spot of the Atlanta Falcons. And we'll talk a little bit about Kenny Pickett later, but I love Pittsburgh. You know, we were hoping that one of the quarterbacks, Malik in particular, landed in Pittsburgh, but we got Kenny Pickett and they have weapons all over the field and continued to add offensive skill position players to that offense. So the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Atlanta Falcons, of course, Kansas City. We wanted a player to go to Kansas City, and we did get that. I think are incredible landing spots. And I also think the Buffalo Bills, hell of a landing spot. I want high-powered offenses with skill position players tethered to elite quarterbacks, and Josh Allen is, in fact, elite. Patrick Mahomes is elite. So when you're talking about a player like James Cook and even later on, with the Khalil Shakir in the fifth round, I think those are prime landing spots for some of these skill position players. So excited to see some of the guys that we liked going to some of these landing spots.
So you know what? This harkens me back to last week. We're on the podcast. I lay out a format for the show, and you shoot me down instantly, and you're like, you know what? That's way too difficult. We can't talk about all that in an hour. We're like two questions in. You throw out four landing spots at once. I thought we were going to go a little more back and forth. I'm just scribbling notes furiously. So let's talk about Atlanta, because I agree. I think Atlanta was a really good landing spot. I know some people out there are like, oh, Marcus Mariota. But I mean, do we really think that Marcus Mariota is the future? Like, no. Do I think Desmond Ridder, third round pick, mediocre prospect profile, is the future? No. Do I think like Desmond Ridder, who is a surprisingly competent round three rookie, like a Davis Mills. Do I think that could be potentially the future? And I'd be okay with it? Yeah. Or, I mean, this might be the worst roster in the NFL. Are they in contention for a top quarterback in the stacked 2023 class? Yes. So I think that's one thing I like about the Falcons, is that there's truly just two dudes there. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Pitts and London have over 50% of the targets. It's probably not going to happen. Generally, we don't see two players with quite that concentration. But generally, we don't see a depth chart like you were talking about. I mean, is Auden Tate, Olamide Zaccheaus? These are the receivers they're competing with. And I think Tyler Allgeier, round five, is interesting. To me, I want people to get him in their rookie drafts. But he feels like the kind of guy where the second he has a big game, I'm flipping him. Because I think we just see it year after year. Like the draft capital rules everything in fantasy football and real football at the running back position. You can be James Robinson and have arguably the greatest rookie season by an undrafted player at running back ever and get replaced the exact year after. So with me, I don't think Tyler Allgeier is safe at all, but I think for a round five running back, he's probably going to crush this year. Since I think one thing people don't talk about, I don't think Cordarrelle Patterson's going to be healthy this whole season. Yeah, I think he's like 2 or 3 years older than any other running back in the NFL. I get it. His role isn't purely between the tackles, but still, he has an injury history. He's 31 years old, and we know he's going to be taking carries. I mean, it kind of sounds like if Deebo Samuel were 31 with kind of half of his role, I'd be pretty terrified. That's why I don't want Cordarrelle Patterson right now and fantasy, I don't really want him on my redraft teams, and why I think Allgeier kind of has potential for more, at least this season.
Larky, can I read you the wide receivers that currently are rostered by the Atlanta Falcons and tell me what you think about these players? I'm just going to rattle through them real quick, all right? Jared Bernhardt, rookie out of Ferris State. Stanley Berryhill, rookie out of Arizona. Damir Bird, Frank Darby, Chad Hansen, Cordell Hodge, Tyshawn James, Calvin Ridley, Auden Tate, Austin Trammell, Olamide Zaccheaus, and Drake London. I mean, if London can't go out there and command 115, 120 targets as a rookie, there's a bigger problem at hand. If he cannot, if they're not throwing him the ball with that cast of characters at wide receiver, I don't even know how you even start to project. And you're saying that, you know, normally we don't see concentration of targets going to, you know, two players like that, 50%. Who the hell else are they going to throw the ball to? Austin Trammell, Damir Bird, Cordarrelle Hodge? I mean, let's just be real here. I mean, I don't care. I could be throwing the ball, Larkey, if that's the cast of guys you're rolling out. I mean, I don't care how bad Marcus Mariota is. Just throw it in the vicinity of London and Pitts and let it and call it a day.
Yeah, 100%. It honestly sounds like a USFL roster outside of London and Ridley when you announce those names. So, I mean, I don't even know what his last name was. You said Stanley somebody or other. What was his name?
Stanley Berryhill III.
That is a creative player. Stanley or it's like the, have you seen the Key and Peele sketch where the names just get funnier and funnier? That's honestly what I was thinking when you're like Stanley Berryhill, like Hingle McCringleberry is on this roster as well. Yeah. I like London. I like Algier. You also mentioned Pittsburgh. I don't want Kenny Pickett necessarily in Superflex Dynasty. He's not a prospect I liked at all. But when I was compiling my rankings, I kind of had him towards the end of my tier one type players. And like I'll throw out a spicy name for you that I would rather have Kenny Pickett over that I know has some people pretty hot and bothered when they were reading the article. And that is, I would rather have Kenny Pickett, who goes to the Steelers, an organization that has a lot of stability up top. We know they can run competent offenses year after year. They've trended very, very pass heavy the last few seasons. Even with Roethlisberger averaging, no joke, 6.2 yards per attempt the past two seasons. That is basically like rookie Zach Wilson is what the Steelers have been working with the last 2 years in terms of efficiency. And they're passing the ball 40 times a game. It's actually ridiculous. And I think Kenny Pickett is competent enough. He gets Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, Pat Freiermuth, Najee Harris in the backfield. They just drafted George Pickens. They just drafted Calvin Austin, who kind of graded out okay. I saw Matt Harmon's reception. Perception likes Calvin Austin even. Like, there are legitimately good players here. Am I crazy if I, Superflex, take Kenny Pickett over some people's still their RB1 and Kenneth Walker?
Oh, man, the Kenneth Walker conundrum is probably, I think, the biggest point of contention right now in the rookie draft space. You have some people who absolutely love him, Larkey, and then there's some people who are very, very concerned about the landing spot and then his role in what he needs to do in order to become an elite fantasy running back or a top-end fantasy running back. I think that's a bit spicy. Larkey, I think it's a bit spicy, but I'm open to hearing why, because I've got Kenny Pickett ranked at 7, right? And I do have Kenneth Walker over him in Superflex, right? At this point, Superflex and single quarterback ADP is damn near the same, but neither here nor there. I think it's a bit spicy. I think you're a little bit spicy. You're a little fuego here, but I'm interested to hear why you would have one Kenny Pickett over Sir Kenneth Walker, if that's in fact what you're saying. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if that's what you're saying, you can't spew that and not explain yourself, Larkin.
I will. So it seems to me like you have Kenneth Walker top 5 then. Is that correct? If you
begrudgingly,
said,
yes.
You said Pickett was 6.
Yes.
So I have, you said Pickett was 6.
Pickett was 7. Pickett was 7.
Okay. So I have Pickett at 6. I've got Kenny Walker at 8. So I'll...
Okay.
I know it's
I got to sit back in my seat right now.
I'll kind of explain my thought process because I've seen him go 101 in rookie drafts. From what I have read up on, he is kind of the consensus 102 right now where people go, oh, Breece Hall, and then there's nobody else at running back, so you just have to take Kenny Walker. My issue with Kenneth Walker, he went to the Seattle Seahawks, and people go, oh, it's Pete Carroll. They're going to run the ball down your throat. This is absolutely incredible for Kenneth Walker. The way I see it is that he went to maybe the most archaic offense in the NFL. Like, if medieval times was an NFL offense, it would be the Seattle Seahawks, where they have a historically efficient quarterback, formerly with Russell Wilson, the only quarterback the last 5 years to have a 6% or higher passing touchdown rate all five seasons. Russell Wilson is a machine. He's surgical, and they never let him throw the ball. What I foresee with Kenneth Walker is that they're going to force feed him 200-plus carries between the 20s as a rookie. I don't see much touchdown upside in this offense, whether it's Drew Lock. I mean, even Baker Mayfield, still not super impressed. And Rashad Penny is still there. I understand he can get injured, but we've also seen the Seahawks lean on Chris Carson over Rashad Penny at points. This is one of the few teams like San Francisco, like the Patriots, where they have shown time and time again that draft capital doesn't matter that much to them. I mean, Russell Wilson was a third round pick. So I'm just not that confident that Kenneth Walker is guaranteed the job, but we'll assume that he is. He's probably not going to catch passes. This team has never been a high target the running back kind of team. So like 2-4% target share in college, Kenneth Walker going to an archaic offense. I'm kind of thinking he's going to have 4.5 yards of carry. He's going to get 200-plus carries. He's going to score like 5 touchdowns, and he's going to give you like 8 fantasy points a game, 10 fantasy points a game. And for me, that's just, I can't get out of bed in the morning and get excited that I in round one of my rookie draft, took a guy who's going to get me 8 to 10 fantasy points a game as a rookie at a position that we know has high injury rates. So there's a chance that this asset also gets injured. And I don't think the Seahawks are going to be quite as bad as we're hoping for. As I survey the NFC, there are so many bad teams. Like the Falcons, I think, are clearly worse as I look at it more and more. I'm not convinced the Seahawks definitely get the super high pick that they want at quarterback. And I just don't like where this franchise is going. I mean, even if they do get the right quarterback, are we going to trust Pete Carroll, who has this kind of ridiculous job security, to finally, like, if Russell Wilson couldn't convince him to run a modern offense, what will? So I'm just, I hate the landing spot. It was already a player that I didn't love. And honestly, I'm not even sure if I would take him 108. The reason I put him at 108 in my rankings is because if for some reason he falls in your rookie draft there, I think you should just take him on principle and then immediately flip him, and that he's going to gain value just over the summer compared to that 108. So I put him there because he's not someone I ever want to take. So that's kind of why for me, out on Kenny Walker, and then Pickett, I'm just like, oh, it's the Steelers. Pickett's prospect profile was good enough. He's surrounded by 5 legitimate weapons on offense with 3 receivers, a tight end, and a running back. Mike Tomlin's a great head coach. So I'll just take Kenny Pickett. He's insulated. He's going to beat out Mitch Trubisky sometime early this year. That for me, Pickett over Walker, for me at least, was a pretty easy decision.
There's a lot to unpack there, because I agree with you on like 98% of everything that you just said. I think hope is the biggest wrecker of dynasty rosters that there is. The hope. People hope. I hope he can get passes. I think he can do it. I think. My big argument against Kenneth Walker in his high upside was, you know, everybody points to, oh, well, he caught the ball at the combine. And I'm just like, come on, man. Like, stop it. If he just, and I have to preface this by saying, just because you didn't catch passes in college doesn't mean you can't do it in the NFL. But I'm trying to envision a world where they never saw him catch the ball in college, and then they're going to get him, you know, on their NFL team and say, you know what, we're going to throw you the ball a bunch. I don't know if you heard, I think it was the Bills. I don't know if it was the GM, I don't know who it was, some higher up from the Buffalo Bills, not the head coach, talk about something that I've preached for a long time, Larky. There's a difference between a running back that can flare out and catch the ball, and can catch screens, and then a running back that can be deployed as a pass-catching weapon. I want the guys that can be deployed as pass-catching weapons. Like, yes, Derrick Henry can physically catch the football. Whenever they dump it to him or give him screens, he does well, right? Nick Chubb, when they give him the ball in the receiving game, he does well. But you can never count on that. It's not consistent. They don't deploy those running backs as pass-catching weapons. And I don't believe that's going to be the case with Kenneth Walker. So if he's not going to be lining up in the slot, running Texas routes, running option routes, running choices, running wheels, then you're truly banking on him being Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb levels of efficient on the ground. And I don't think he's that. I don't think he's Derrick Henry. I don't believe he's Nick Chubb. And even if he somehow is that, think about where those guys finish in points per game in fantasy being great. You know, Derrick Henry, the year I believe he ran for over 2,000 yards, he still didn't finish as RB1 in points per game. I think
he was RB3.
So, I mean, it's just a hard path to be an elite player when at the running back position when you just don't catch the ball. I mean, Austin Eckler has been top. I know I'm being conservative, top five over the past couple of years, and that son of a gun just got over 200 carries. And the reason why he was so good is because he catches the ball. So I guess the reason why I still have Kenneth Walker 3 is because of the sort of unwritten rules of dynasty rookie drafts that positional scarcity forces you and you must take the running back high. But I'll tell you this, Larky, I don't want to. Like, I don't want to do it. I just feel like he's the guy that I know he's going to get the ball 15 to 18 times a game, and he's just going to have the value because he's the running back. But man, when I look at some of these other receivers in their landing spots, like, I would just much rather those players on my roster than Kenneth Walker. And I think that's why, for me, he is sort of outside of the quarterbacks and where to take them in Superflex, I think he's the biggest damn conundrum in this entire rookie subset.
I think that's well said. Now, I've got another one for you. This one, I think we both agree on, but we can talk a little bit more about upside. Because we were talking before, like, Kenneth Walker probably doesn't quite have the upside that, like, London, Burks, a lot of these receivers are going to potentially have. I don't think Walker has that 15 to 20 fantasy point a game upside, where I can envision some of these receivers 1, 2, 3 years down the line giving you 16, 17 fantasy points a game. So why do we both prefer Sky Moore to Chris Olave? I think that's a fun one because I think to some people, it's painfully obvious that you take Chris Olave. When the Saints, let me remind myself as well. The Saints traded up to pick 11 to take Chris Olave. He's paired with Jameis Winston, who seems good enough. Michael Thomas is nearly 30. There's not too much else on that roster. Why are we leaning Sky Moore here? Is it landing spot? Is it prospect profile? What for you makes you like Sky Moore?
Well, this is where I lean on what I do, and what I like to do is film. And I had Sky Moore in my film grade as a 72.25, and Chris Olave graded out as a 70.25. And then I also have, and don't worry, 70 doesn't mean C-level prospect. Jamar Chase was the highest graded receiver that I did in this, and he was like an 84, which is, that finishes out like top three type of elite prospect. So, and then when I factored in the model, based on historical hit rate for draft capital, they get a draft capital bump. Sky Moore graded out better. So it's easy for me to lean on the model and say, well, it's easy. Sky Moore graded out better on film. Second round draft capital bumped him up to like a 75, and the first round draft capital only bumped Chris Olave up to about a 73.9. So it's easy. But I think he's the better prospect. I believe when I watched the film, what I saw on tape from Sky Moore, the explosiveness, his 10-yard split, I believe, was the fastest in the class. The way that he separates and then being tethered to Patrick Mahomes is a bump, but I did not adjust Sky Moore above Chris Olave. I'd already had him over Chris Olave going in. I just don't envision a world in which Chris Olave is ever the one on a team. Do I think Sky Moore can do it? Yes. Do I think it's going to happen this year? No. It's the long game with me with Sky Moore. I don't think he's going to go out there and give you us 1,000 yards in year one. I think it's going to take some time. Normally, the learning curve for wide receiver in the NFL is it takes a little bit of time. But I do think he's the better prospect. I think he's the better player. And I think he has the shot to carve out the one role in Kansas City. I don't see that with Chris Olave, man. I don't. He never was able to take command of that offense at Ohio State ever. Even as a senior, I'd venture to say he was the third best option, fourth best option, if you want to include Trevion Henderson in that receiving game. Jackson Smith and Jigba was better, and Garrett Wilson was better. He came back as a senior, at least when Devontae Smith came back his senior year, he absolutely crushed and was the unquestioned alpha in that offense. Sometimes there were points of the game where I was like, is Chris Olave even playing? So while New Orleans gave up ridiculous draft capital to move up and get him, there's no way I'm taking him over Sky Moore ever in a rookie draft. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Sam, I've got them. Let me see. I'm not going to reveal too much. I have Sky Moore four spots ahead of Chris Olave. So I actually wrote an article. It's free on FTN Fantasy to read. I think it's called like Josh Larkey's Projection Notes and Updates, or it's something like that. Just go to ftnfantasy.com. You'll see the article. Totally free to read. And one thing I outline is that I think my sneaky dark horse receiver to get 1,000 yards as a rookie is Sky Moore. Am I projecting him for that? No. I think I have him projected around 800, which is very aggressive. But I basically just like systematically worked through the Chiefs offense. And already, like you, I thought Sky Moore was an excellent prospect. May I remind everyone that he was a quarterback and a cornerback in high school, was given a scholarship to Western Michigan to play probably cornerback, and they realized that he's a pretty damn good receiver, and he leads the team in receiving as a true freshman. He had never played receiver before. The guy's a natural. It's what I like to see, the breakout age, the just being able to dominate older, more physically developed competition than him when he himself had never even played the position. I absolutely love it. Also, if we look at the Chiefs this year, I think Sky Moore is just going to gain a ton of value in Dynasty. As in, like, even if I didn't love Sky Moore's prospect, which I do, it's the nuts landing spot. So obviously you have Patrick Mahomes, it's pass heavy, you've got Andy Reid calling the plays. But on top of that, Travis Kelce's getting much older. His yards per route run this year was about 30-40% lower than it had been. I think it was like 35% lower than it had been the last three seasons. Clearly, Travis Kelce's on the decline. He turns 33 in October. And I was like, let's give Travis Kelce a 22% target share, which is a touch higher than last year because there's no Hill. But it's not very aggressive because, again, he's going to be 33. You look at the running backs. The last 2 years, Chiefs running backs have had 112 targets on the nose back-to-back seasons. It's about 18% target share. So you got like 40% of the targets going to running backs and tight ends. We have around 60% of Patrick Mahomes' targets going to the receivvers. We can rifle through them quickly. Mecole Hardman, gadget dude. His yards per reception, his A-dot has come down each year. It was, I think, like 11 last year. Started at 20 yards per reception as a rookie. They do not like to use him. He is purely a gadget guy, manufactured touches. Then we have Marquez Valdes-Scantling. We know what he is. Career high target share of 14% from Aaron Rodgers. Career catch rate. With Aaron Rodgers, who has like 70% completion percentage every year, his career catch rate is below 50%. His career yards perception is like 17. We know what Marquez Valdes-Scantling is. He's a deep threat. He's good at it, but he's not going to get a lot of targets. And then we have Juju Smith-Schuster, who only has $3 million guaranteed. It's a one-year deal. All of his efficiency metrics have been going down and down, down year after year. He got injured week 5 of last season through 4 weeks. Ready to know who out-targeted him on the Steelers? Deontay Johnson. Oh, my bad. And Chase Claypool. Did I mention Chase Claypool and Deontay Johnson each missed one of the first 4 games? So Juju in 4 games to start the season had fewer targets than Claypool and Deontay, who each missed a game. Oh, and I forgot. Oh my, silly me. Najee Harris also had more targets than Juju the first month of last year before he got injured in game 5. So basically, all these receiving options are role pieces on the decline, or we just know what they are. I think Sky Moore has a pretty unbelievable opportunity to sneak in like a 20% target share if he really hits the ground running. Do I expect it to happen? Am I projecting it? No. But I love him in redraft, and I love him in Dynasty because it's a good player in the nuts landing spot who I think is going to produce above expectations this season.
I hope you're right. I would love for it because I'm banking on him to give me not much of anything this year, and I'd be fine with it still. And I would still take him that high because I do think he has the talent and the skill set to develop into the one in that offense. And it's not going to look like Tyreek Hill because he's not the same type of player. But he's a hell of a wide receiver. in a great spot with a young quarterback in an offense looking for somebody to develop into that one. So if he does give us that type of production this year, Josh, like if he somehow gave us rookie DJ Moore production, I believe DJ Moore had 700 and something yards in his first season, I would be over the moon. And you make a very good point. You make a very good point. I don't know. Let me ask you this. Chris Olave and Sky Moore, both their rookie season, they finish with 55 receptions, 750 yards, same stats. Which player do you think would have more value going into the next season? I almost can guarantee you it's going to be Sky Moore because he's paired with Patrick Mahomes in that offense after having a solid rookie season. If he does what Devontae Smith did, 104 targets for 916 yards, I mean, how high would people value Sky Moore going into startup drafts, you know, in 2023? I think his value would be absolutely insane. The way that people were salivating over Elijah Moore that propelled his dynasty value, startup value to like wide receiver 15 at one point in time, Sky Moore probably would be viewed like, I think he'd be a top 12 kind of wide receiver going into 2023 startup value.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I think one more thing, just, I know some people are going to wonder because he's like 5'10", 195. No, he was not purely a slot guy in college. I mean, you know, you watched the tape, but I saw the stats. I think he lined up in the slot like 36 or 37% of the time, which means that he was not in the slot 2/3 of the time. So I really think he's going to be able to play all over. And I think they're probably going to have, Juju in the slot, him and MVS out wide.
Yep.
Kelsey roaming around. I think it's going to be a pretty good offense. I don't know if it's not going to be one of these ridiculous Chiefs offenses, I don't think. But I feel like it's good enough that there's real touchdown equity. It's going to be a good... Yeah, I think he's going to have a really strong rookie season. And I think you make a good point. Olave, for him to truly increase his dynasty value, he has to go nuclear, I think. Because if he doesn't, then all the concerns about low ceiling is all anyone's going to talk about. Because I'm with you. I think he has kind of the lower ceiling. Generally, the small receiver who plays 4 years in college and is not elusive after the catch has a lower ceiling. You pretty much have to be Calvin Ridley to be on the smaller end and not offer that much after the catch. At least with Calvin Ridley, he came out early after 3 years.
Larky, he scored. Chris Olave in my film grades was tied for the second lowest. He was tied with a couple of receivers, but the second lowest score that I gave for yards after the catch. I mean, that's how bad. Just, again, my subjective film eye, Chris Olave, out of 10, scored a 5 in that category, which was tied for second lowest amongst all the wide receivers that I watched and graded on film. So in the data backs it up. He just does nothing after the catch. And that's kind of weird for a smaller receiver not to be a yak guy. It's just odd, right?
Well, yeah, usually those guys, I think it's because those guys exist, they're everywhere, but historically that's not the guy that you're taking early round one, or especially not trading up to pick 11 to take. Those guys are everywhere. Right. We just generally don't see them be fantasy relevant, and we pretty much never see them in round one. I feel like when it's the small guy that's got some speed, it's like Henry Ruggs, where at least like Henry Ruggs after the catch was dangerous. Elijah Moore, dangerous. He's going to make guys miss after the catch. Sky Moore can make guys miss after the catch. You're not going to find too many of these smaller receivers that don't give you much after the catch. And I think for me, like unless Olave went to like Green Bay or Kansas City, it was going to be game over. Now, unless he was with some elite quarterback where I just knew it, the ball was going to be in the breadbasket every time. I don't want to have to bank on what his catch percentage is going to be to determine what his receiving yards are that year.
Mm. Okay. I'm with you. We're in lockstep
here, brother.
We're good
so far. All right. So we don't like the player. I think we both like this landing spot, though. James Cook to Buffalo. You mentioned Buffalo. Maybe we talk a little bit of Khalil Shakir as well. So I'm just going to throw it out there because we talked all about like hit rates. And I was talking about how the running backs have a 2 to 3 times better hit rate than the receivers on day three. I've got two receivers on day three that I would recommend drafting at some point late. Khalil Shakir, one of them. Just because it's Buffalo. That slot role is currently owned by constantly injured but very productive Jameson Crowder. And I liked him as a prospect. Am I being just cocky with my eval if I like Shakur? And am I worshiping the draft capital if I bumped James Cook up? I think James Cook is kind of a round one, round two turn pick because of what I think he will do year one and how his value increases. Is that crazy? Because I didn't have James Cook in my first two rounds prior to the draft. So I bumped him up like 12 slots.
You don't even want to know the running backs that I had based on the film ahead of James Cook. There's like 9 of them who were undrafted as far as as a running back, right? I'm not even joking. Just everything that I look for in terms of what I want out of a running back, he possessed just about none of them outside of things that are really important. He scored the best. His receiving versatility, his hands, like he's an awesome receiving back. He's a fantastic receiving back in an offense that I don't know how much Josh Allen actually will target the running back on off-script plays. He's going to run the ball. Now, if they design screen plays and you hear the GM or whoever the hell it was talk about James Cook and his ability, if you really listen to that, and I'm not trying to dive into each word that was said, but he was like, yeah, he's a receiving weapon, and there's a difference between running backs that can catch the ball and those that I can line up in the slot. He's going to be awesome in receiving. And then I think he can take a couple of carries away. I think he can take some carries away. I think he can handle some of the rushing duties. I don't think you want James Cook doing that. I don't. So if you're telling me he's going to be James White, maybe a little bit better like than James White, then fine. But just my expectation is low. I'll just say that. Even with the draft capital, I can't in good conscience say you should draft him after that. Like back of the first in this class, early second, that's a great spot. He's in a great situation. You have to assume that with that coaching staff, they're going to try to get him the ball in different ways. But I'm not expecting him to go out there and give me 15 carries and be Christian McCaffrey 2.0. I'm seeing people draft him top 5 in Superflex drafts, top 3 based on that. And there's no way in hell I'm telling you, it just based on the grades, I had a lot of players who just I thought were better running backs, but we knew this and we talked about the name brand equity, Dalvin Cook's little brother. You can't, when you look at his profile in the SEC, I don't think there's anything, even his receiving, that just says, man, this is a dude. Like, what is it, Larky? What did we miss? Because I'm just looking at raw data. And I'm looking at this and he's like, it looks just like a backup running back. Like what is so special about this profile? He didn't test like a freak athlete. The production just, I don't get it, man. But you know, this is what I tell people. Just because you draft a player in rookie drafts doesn't mean you need to hold him the entire season, right? Like I'll draft him and he's somebody that if he starts flashing and I can get out for future first round draft capital, a first round pick plus a player, I'd probably make that deal. And I think there are leagues, we see him going top 3, top 5. There are leagues where I bet you in the season you can probably trade James Cook if he goes out there and have 7 catches in his first game. You can get a 23 first and like a Tony Pollard for him. You know what I mean? You can go get a 23 first and I'm just throwing out a name, Ramondre Stevenson or something like that. I guarantee there are leagues where you can get that done. Love the draft capital. Love the landing spot. Not a big fan of the player, but I do agree with you. Around the turn is where I'll take him. Top half of drafts, insane to me.
Yeah, he's like the ultimate litmus test for trying to stick to my pre-draft eval of a non-productive small running back. But yeah, I have him at the 1-2 turn because of a few things. The Buffalo Bills, second round draft capital, and he catches passes. And if I'm telling people not to draft Kenneth Walker because he doesn't catch passes, it feels weird to be like, oh, you also can't draft James Cook, even though he does. So that for me is why I'm keeping him at the 1-2 turn, because I think there's a world. I don't think there's any world where he's Austin Eckler, because Eckler was actually a pretty good runner in college. He was just a small school guy. And I feel like the NFL has actually warmed up more to the Eckler type, where the 200-pounder, it's no longer a death sentence in the NFL, and that like these guys can get decent workloads. But I think what you're hoping for is it's like James White, but just a little more consistent, I guess. So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. But yeah, he's not someone that I necessarily really want. But if he's there at the turn, I'm just going to scoop him.
Yep, I'm with you.
So now let's talk a couple landing spots we didn't like. So far, it's been all positive. We love these landing spots. There were some landmines. I thought Kenneth Walker hit me with a couple landmines that you saw during the draft.
Seattle, an obvious landmine. Did not like it. I think... Is it the Washington Commanders? I don't like it, man. I didn't like it for anybody. I didn't like it for Jahan Dotson, and I know he got the draft capital. Didn't like the Commanders. Tampa Bay, good this year. I don't know how good that is moving forward, especially if this is Tom Brady's final season in Tampa Bay. I think that could be a landmine spot for a 23-year-old running back who's probably going to be behind Leonard Fournette this year. I'm cautioning that situation. And I also think, and hear me out when I say this, because I know a lot of people are going to be like, Ray, you're out of your damn mind. I think it's not so much the team, but I think it's the player in whom they reportedly wanted and couldn't get. But I think Green Bay, we need to be careful with Christian Watson in Green Bay. I really, really do. An FCS, small school wide receiver. The transition for wide receiver, period, is difficult from college to the NFL. But you're taking a guy who really was just a big play guy at North Dakota State. I mean, you look at his stats, he was nothing special either. I mean, he was just realistically, he was bigger and faster than everybody else that he was playing. But you put him in a situation like Green Bay where the expectations are way up here. And if Christian Watson doesn't go out there and is commanding targets over Alan Lazard or Sammy Watkins early on, I think people are going to be in full fucking panic mode on him. I love Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how ready he is to it. Even it took Davante Adams, who most of us consider the best wide receiver in football, it took him a little bit to build that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. It just didn't start right away. So I think people need to be mindful of their expectations for Christian Watson early. Don't like the Washington Commanders at all. And, you know, those are in New England, of course, but I don't think we'll do a lot of talking about Tyquan Thornton. But what a shit situation to go to for what a shit situation for Mac Jones having to deal with Cole Strange and Tyquan Thornton. So those are some of my landmine landing spots.
Yeah, I'm with you on New England. I'm with you on Washington. I don't want any part of Jahan Dotson. I've got him kind of early-ish in the second round. I don't think you're going to get him. He's kind of like Kadarius Toney, where I had him like somewhere in the second round last year, where I'm like, you know what? At a certain point, you just grab the guy that has the draft capital because he's probably going to do something year one. And at a certain point, you just have to trust the hit rates and that. Grab the guy that went round one. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't like that landing spot. I don't think Wentz is a great quarterback for him. I think they're going to be good enough to not be able to get a high pick next year. They're probably going to win 7-8 games. Yeah, I think that's terrible. I think Tampa Bay, I thought that was a very good landing spot for Rashad White. So I think this one's probably going to blow your hair back. I have Rashad White. I'm recommending you take him at pick 12 with James Cook at pick 13. That is my turn. So here's why I like Rashad White. And we actually talked pre-show about how like there's a chance he does nothing as a rookie. So what I understand there's concerns about Tom Brady. Who even knows how long he plays? Who knows what the next quarterback is? Like at one point it looked like Kyle Trask was the guy. That's all terrifying. But like with James Cook, where I trust draft capital and landing or draft capital and receiving profile, Rashad White did get third round draft capital, which is important. He did not go on day three. He had over 450 receiving yards as a senior at Arizona State. I get it. It's Arizona State. He was a senior. But still, he was lining up out wide a good portion of the time. He's probably the best receiver in this class. I think it's probably either him or James Cook at the running back position is the best actual receiving back. So I like that profile where he's probably going to get some kind of action on day one. And I think he might be the best handcuff for this season. Leonard Fournette's never made it through a full season healthy. I think Rashad White is like truly a top three fantasy football running back any week that Leonard Fournette is out. because you know Tom Brady likes to dump it off. We know that Rashad White's going to get pretty much all the work in that offense. They hate Keyshawn Vaughn. Giovanni Bernard's going to take something, but that role is so outrageous. There's going to be like 30 fantasy points a game going to the running backs. And I think Rashad White's going to get a huge chunk if Fournette is out. And I think he gets enough, even while Fournette is in, to stabilize the value. So for me, I just think that year one, I have a hard time seeing his value decline. And I just like to invest in the big pass-catching running backs, especially if they get the day two draft capital. So I have him over James Cook because it's like, hey, do I want... Right now, day one, they're both good offenses. I'm not going to look too far down the line with the running backs. For me, receiver, I'll look 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. Or running back, it's pretty much 1, 2 years out. And okay. I think those are both great offenses. If anything, Brady targets the running back more. And I don't see a world where James Cook is winning your league. I think there's a real chance where, just like last year, Fournette gets injured in like week 13 or 14, Rashad White is truly the signature league-winning running back you want. So for me, in a weak class, I have him into the first round where it's like, hey, I'm just going to go upside. And I know that he truly is one injury away from giving you 15 to 20 fantasy points a game.
But don't we have a couple of running backs like that? I think we could say that about Tyrion Davis Price, who got day two draft capital that I called a sleeper because I didn't think in a million years he'd go in round three. But Elijah Mitchell perpetually banged up already as a second year player. And Jeff Wilson, no thanks. Trey Sermon, terrible. So I think TDP is in that category. We talked about Tyler Algier. I agree with you with Rashad White. Damian Pierce, all he has to get through is Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead. And I do think people are the cart above the horse a little bit with Damian Pierce. I think Marlon Mack will open the season as the one, the starting running back in that offense. And we'll see. You know, what is he now? 2 years removed from the Achilles tear, so he should look sharp. And then I also think Isaiah Spiller, the landing spot of the Chargers. You talk about one injury away. Hell, they don't even want to give Austin Eckler a bunch of work. And we saw Justin Jackson, and I had him, Larky. You played Justin Jackson those weeks where, I mean, he was out there getting you 20-plus fantasy points every time he got the start. I mean, goal line work, receiving work. They don't want to give Austin Eckler the ball like that. Austin Eckler's come out and said he doesn't want to get the ball 300 times. He wants to preserve his career. So while not day two draft capital, there's a whole cluster of guys who went early part of day three. And I'd venture to say you're talking about top handcuffs in an offense that has Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and they added one of the top offensive guards in Zion Johnson in the class to that offensive line that outside of Jamar Chase, a lot of people thought Rashawn Slater should have been Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. What a goddamn landing spot for Spiller to fit into at 20 years old. And I know we're only thinking a year or two down the line, but he and Breece Hall, the only running backs in the class to be 20 years old. And that the landing spot of the Chargers for Spiller is very intriguing for me. And now, because he was a day three pick, you don't have to worry about spending first round draft capital on him. I've seen him as early as 112 and as late as 306. So when you're talking about some of those sweet spots, I think he has to be in consideration as well. And if you didn't like the profile to start with, then there's even more reason to fade him now. So I understand that. I'm taking your thunder before you try to lay it on me. But damn it, that's a hell of a landing spot for a running back, man.
Yeah, I really like the Spiller landing spot. I'm a Charger fan, but also I'm realistic. Justin Herbert is going to be there long term. I don't think there's any chance he doesn't get extended. For the life of Isaiah Spiller's rookie contract for 4 years, he's going to be on the Justin Herbert offense. And I think he's kind of what they've been looking for, which I liked. Because it seems, what was it? It was back-to-back years. Josh Kelly in 2020. Then we got Larry Roundtree in 2021. They want the first and second down grinder back to help preserve Austin Eckler. They clearly haven't found it. And I think he's fine. I think he was a fine prospect. I think people excited about him going as early as round two were getting a little ahead of themselves. But, I mean, he's a complete player. He was a three-year starter at Texas A&M. Every single year he was getting you like 12, 15 carries a game, a couple receptions a game. So I like that profile. I think if Eckler were to go down, Spiller could be pretty much a monster. Since, I mean, especially right now, they actually have nothing else on their roster.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to see Roundtree and Josh Kelly getting a ton of work over him. So I actually have Spiller over Dameon Pierce. I know a lot of people want Pierce first because of immediate opportunity, and they're like, he could be the bell cow, but there's nothing to me in Pierce's profile that says he can handle that. He never had more than like 107 carries in college in a season. He never even hit 20 receptions in a season in college. For me, I think Dameon Pierce is, a lot of people speculating like, oh, it was Florida, they misused him. And it sounds like the Kenneth Walker stuff. They're like, oh, you don't understand though. Like Michigan State didn't throw to the running back. It's like, Dameon Pierce was mishandled at Florida. I mean, hey, that could very well be true. But is that a variable that I want to factor in suddenly as like the scheme uncertainty or the coaching malpractice or something from college? I'm just going to take, at a certain point, you just have to take the stats for the stats. He didn't produce in college. So for me, I've got Spiller over Pierce. I know a lot of people have it the other way just because of day one opportunity, but
I don't. I've got Spiller over Pierce as well. I've got him over Pierce as well, Larky.
So let me ask you if you're concerned about Tyrion David Price, TDP as you called him at all, because here's why I don't like this guy. Let me see. Let me scroll down in my rankings. Oh, shit. I've got him at, I'm recommending him at 23. Probably not going to take, you probably won't get him. Here's what, I know that sounds absolutely insane. Here's what I don't like about him. Everyone's talking about how he's some big, fast running back. Like, didn't you hear? He ran a legitimate 4.48 at the combine, and he's like 230 pounds. And to that, I say, did you look at the combine report? He ran a 4.48, not at the 229 pounds that LSU listed him at. He weighed in at 211 at the combine, making it significantly less impressive. He never had above a 3% target share in college. This feels like a bad grinder back. And I just don't know if there's any upside. I get it. It's Kyle Shanahan. I don't think he's going to catch any passes. I think he's going to have to be pretty hyper-efficient on the ground. Like, could there be weeks where they use him and he does well? Sure. But also, it's only 1 year of production at LSU. He didn't even get that many carries. Like, he barely hit 1,000 yards this past year on the ground. That's his big breakout season. So I think there's some red flags there that the guy's actually only 211. And it's like where Kenneth Walker, I was like, it concerns me if you have a 211-pound grinder back. We're talking like significantly less athletic, less good Kenny Walker in a good landing spot. And I don't know. I just can't get excited about that.
Well, shit, I thought I was excited about him, and I have him at 24. So I guess we're on the same page. I mean, I got him ranked at 24. Here's what I think, man. I think that, and this is, you know, listen, watching the games, watching Saturdays, LSU was a goddamn dumpster fire, man. I can't express that enough. They were bad. And every time I watched TDP, I was like, this kid can play. He's good. Like, I thought he would be a sleeper, Larky, because I projected him going in round 5 or round 6 of the NFL draft. But the fact that San Francisco took him in the 3rd over, I believe, a Rashad White. I think he went before Rashad White, but I know he went before Zamir and Dameon Pierce and Isaiah Spiller. And the fact that, you know, Elijah Mitchell has been banged up. I mean, didn't he just have like a scope on his knee or something? He's going to play, man. He's going to play in a good offense. He's going to get an opportunity. And what I always say is, we see this shit happen every year, man. As soon as these guys get on the field, like their value just skyrockets, right? The moment it's announced Elijah Mitchell sitting and Tyrion Davis Price is going to be the starting running back, I guarantee you could flip him immediately for at least a 2023 second. I guarantee you that. Anybody can get that done. So with some players like this, while I like their sleeper potential, I'm also a realist. And if I get that opportunity to cash out for a second round pick, then I'm doing it with a player like TDP. But it's just betting on the situation. It's betting on the Niners. It's what Matt Kelly talks about, the Alfred Morris corollary with the rushing quarterback and the, you know, elevating the running back. I mean, I'm not in love with him. If you're telling me Ray's garbage, don't draft him, I'd be like, all right. Like, I'd be like, fine. Like, I'm just banking on the opportunity and the running backs that are in front of him. There is definitely a path for him to get on the field.
Yeah, I think his value could rise, like you said. I have a hard time taking a running back that's probably going to give you a couple good enough games situationally. But I just don't see that true like league winning potential. So for me, that's kind of why someone like Rashad White is so much higher, like pretty much a full round ahead is.
You really think Rashad White, and I liked White. White was my RB5 film grade, but you think he's like, let me just ask this, Larky. Do you really think he's that good, or do you just think he's the better option of the bunch that we have?
I don't think he's actually really, really good in real life, but I think his skill set couldn't be more fantasy friendly, and that he couldn't have gone to a better offense as a handcuff running back. And he got the day three capital. So that's kind of how it is for me. Like, I get it. He's kind of an older prospect, but I just can't shake away that Leonard Fournette gets injured at some point, and then Rashad White's giving you nearly 20 fantasy points a game. And that we have a big back catching 5, 6, 7 balls a game, getting goal line work. So that for me, I just can't shake that, where you either keep it and ride the production, or you flip it to someone that needs a running back. Like, the Leonard Fournette dynasty manager in your league might pay in like an absolute truckload come playoff time if Fournette's out, or like mid-season Fournette goes down for 4 weeks. I think Rashad White's getting you 20 fantasy points a week. So maybe I'm just focused too much on what that little stretch is going to look like, but I think he's good enough to see the field at some point in each game, just kind of regardless of what happens. So I really like him in that sense. We've got time for a couple more. I don't know if you have a favorite one you want to get to. I have one I want to get to, so I'm just going to throw it out there. What the fuck are the Bears doing with Justin Fields? What are we doing with Justin Fields in Dynasty? Was this the absolute worst draft? If you have Justin Fields on your Dynasty team and you see this draft, Velus Jones, he played 6 years in college. He turns 25 in a week and a half. That was the reinforcement. My goodness. I mean,
I know. So what I'm hearing is apparently they have a shit ton of cap space next year. Like, apparently what I'm hearing is they're committed to Fields, but they're also trying to like tear it down before they build it up, and they want to be really, really bad next year to get high draft capital. And I have not looked into contract situation. But apparently they have a lot of cap space next year, and the free agent class at wide receiver is quite good. You know, you got players that are right there. Like, what's going to happen with DK Metcalf and Deontay Johnson and Terry McLaurin? And, you know, you've got a wide receiver out of Ohio State that should be in this next year's class, Jackson Smith and Jigba. So it looks bad right now for Chicago fans. I do think it's an opportunity to buy low on Fields because they did nothing to surround him with talent. I still believe in the player. I still believe in the skill set. And we saw it in flashes last year with them putting him on the field, taking him off. Then he's mysteriously hurt. Blockers letting him get blindsided. But you see the tantalizing ability. That scramble touchdown run. You saw him versus the Rams. He has it all there. It's probably going to be rough this year. And I liken it to what Philadelphia. Look how bad that receiving core was last year, and look how much better it got in one offseason, right? Like, they went from Jalen Reagor, Quez Watkins, and Devontae Smith in one, just looking putrid, to having A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Dallas Goedert as their starters, and Jalen Hurts looking primed to succeed in that offense. So while not good right now, I think the long-term play in Chicago should be good, but we may have to temper expectations again. And unfortunately for Fields, if that is the plan, then not this upcoming season, but the next season, it's like do or die, because it's year three for Justin Fields. They gave him Jackson Smith and Jigba. They went out and signed or traded for DK Metcalf or whomever it is. Like, he needs to be ready to go. So it sucks for him, but I still believe in Justin Fields.
So would you buy him right now in Dynasty, or are you trying to get him for people listening? Are you thinking like a month and a half into the season? If you had to just
gut feel, I think there's a window now because people are panicked. Like, people are like, if you're going to do it, you need to do it right now. And if you don't do it right now, I'd wait until week three of the season, where the Bears are 0-3 and Fields has been sacked 80 times and nothing is happening. And people are like, this is over. I think you'll have another opportunity to get him, probably even lower than right now. But, I mean, the sentiment on him right now is quite bearish. So I do think you've got a shot to get him now. But if you don't do it now, like over training camp, you know, it's fucking training camp highlights. People get excited and have some enthusiasm. But once the season rolls around and they get just shellacked for 4 weeks and Fields just looks abysmal, I think you'll have another opportunity to get him. So if you're going to do it right now, and if you can't do it right now, just wait, because it's not going to be good for them early on.
What do you want to go out on? Anything from the show sheet? Anything you want to ask about my rankings?
Damn it, Larky. Let's go a little bit more.
All right, Larky.
I got some time. Let's just keep fucking going, man. Let's go, Larky. I'll let you know when I got to get the hell out of here. Let's go.
There we go. We're still going. Let's. You know what? I'm glad that you want to keep going, because let's get to the eating crow part of the podcast where.
Oh gosh.
I basically just swipe. We agreed Breece Hall 101. Last week when we recorded, and then I swiped the 102 because it was so obvious that Malik Willis was 102. You took your guy Matt Corral 103. We pretty much took two round three quarterbacks within the first three picks of a rookie draft. I hope nobody acted on that advice prior to the draft, though I have to say I don't think we were the only ones acting that way. Like, what happened? So the stat that I'm going to reference is that there was only one quarterback drafted in the first two rounds this year. That hasn't happened since the year 2000. 22 years ago, with Chad Pennington going round one, nobody going in round two. Wow. So Kenny Pickett is Chad Pennington. Maybe in more ways than one, actually. So, I don't know. That's a deep cut for all the 30 and up crew out there.
Here's the thing, Larky. We made that fatal mistake pre-draft, but I don't think either of us are recommending any of these quarterbacks outside of Kenny Pickett inside of round one of a rookie draft. And some guy tweeted me the other day, Larky, and I put it out there. I made a joke and I said, I can't believe there are people out here still recommending these quarterbacks, round three quarterbacks in the top half of rookie drafts. And somebody, I'm not even going to give him the benefit of the doubt, some guy that doesn't follow me somehow found the tweet and quote tweeted it and said, we're all telling on ourselves, because what's the point of evaluating these prospects for a year and a half only to let draft capital influence our decisions? And basically, we should still be drafting Malik Willis today where we thought he was going to go. And I'm like, that's probably the stone worst rationale for why you should continue to draft a player, because you think your evaluation is better than what the NFL just told you they value these players at. You know, it's one of those things where I don't think Matt Corral, Malik Willis, Desmond Ridder, if I gave you, let's even throw Sam Howell in the equation with these four quarterbacks. Josh, if I had $1 million on a table and I said none of these quarterbacks will be drafted before pick 70 in the NFL draft, and all you have to do is say yes or like yay or nay, over under 70. Would you be a millionaire today?
I mean, my goodness. Yeah, I still can't believe that we had.
Like, can you believe it? Can you believe it?
Well, I think what's crazy is that, I mean, I don't know about you, I even sort of talked myself into Ridder in the third round, where I was like, you know what? It is a wide open depth chart. And then I had to kind of stop myself and I was like, you know what? Sure. I can move Ridder up in relation to the other rookies that aren't Pickett, but I mean, this is where like Kellen Mond went last year.
What, Kyle Trask got drafted before these guys.
Yeah, Kyle Trask was round two.
I would not in for there could have been $1 billion on the table, and the question is Malik Willis over under draft slot of 80. And you'd be like, this is free fucking money.
Oh yeah, you'd bet the farm on it.
So at this point, you know, I don't even knock any analyst for their ranking of the quarterbacks. I mean, this hasn't happened where one quarterback was selected in the first two rounds in 20 years. So this is truly, we talk about outliers all the time. This is outlier. And what's crazy, Josh, is I heard Mel Kiper say the other day that if he were to set the over-under of quarterbacks drafted in round one next year, the number would be 6.5 and he would smash the over. Like, that's, I guess I'm trying to understand what the takeaway is. And I guess it's as much as we want to boost up quarterbacks because it's super flex, like all the writing was on the wall about how developmental these guys are. Because what did we always say about Malik? He's got the talent, but he probably needs a year or two to bake, right? Matt Corral could do it, but he probably is not ready. So there was an anonymous scout that said, you stick Malik Willis or Matt Corral in a practice next to Sam Darnold, and Sam Darnold is going to look light years ahead of those guys. And Sam Darnold is god-awful. So we can eat all the crow we want. I will gladly eat it because everybody else who did rankings, we're all eating from the same table when it comes to these quarterbacks. Even if you didn't like Matt Corral or Desmond Ritter, you didn't have them as third-round picks. You didn't have them as mid-second-rounders in Superflex, right? So I just think this is this was a wake-up call and a slap to the face, and we've been spoiled for the past 2 years with the prospects that we had. And the NFL was like, you know, we had some good ones. It's the stock market, right? Price always comes back to the mean, you know? Stocks go up, they go down, but eventually they come back to the mean. We've been riding at all-time highs in fantasy, in dynasty, in rookie draft. I mean, literally, even if you didn't leave your rookie draft last year with Jamar Chase or Kyle Pitts, if you just threw a stone at a pick, you probably hit. You probably got a good player, whether it's Devontae Smith, whether it's Rashad Bateman or Elijah Moore, Mac Jones, you probably got a good pick. You throw that shit at this year, it's a lot different. So I still can't believe the draft that happened and how it happened. And not just the quarterbacks, man. Wandell Robinson, John Mechie, Tyquan Thornton, Tyrion Davis Price, all these players going round two, high draft capital. It was just the strangest thing. I've never seen anything like it, Josh, ever.
Yeah, I've got, I have Tyquan Thornton at player 34 in my rankings. I don't know where to put him. It just felt kind of weird to have a second round receiver that low. But I mean, my notes for him were that he's sprinter fast. He ran a 4.28 at the combine. 6'2", slight frame, and he's going to be Isaiah McKenzie. And you don't start Isaiah McKenzie in fantasy. He's a pure gadget player who didn't, quote-unquote, break out until he was a senior. Didn't do all that much before that. Is going to get manufactured a couple touches. I mean, if there's any team that I do not trust with wide receivers, it's got to be the Patriots, just to begin with. And then they kind of prove it when they take someone who has pretty much no path to starter reps in Tyquan Thornton. It was crazy. Yeah, him, Tyrion, the Velus Jones pick, which we talked about from round three. It was pretty crazy. And
yeah,
let me bounce this idea off of you. So I have Malik Willis as QB5 now in the class, out of the big five. And it's not that I don't think there's upside there. My fear is that he's never going to see the field. Tannehill's had some extension talks. Usually when you hear about that, it means it's going to happen. I feel like we heard that with Derek Carr, and there were the murmurs like, oh, no. Derek Carr's not good enough. They're going to move on. Same thing with Kirk Cousins' extension talks. And it was like, oh, no, Kirk Cousins isn't good enough. And then they extend him. I think they're going to extend Tannehill. Malik Willis he smells like a career backup. And I think someone like, so Sam Howell, he got round five draft capital, which is horrible. But he's in Washington. We already know that they've learned Taylor Heinicke is not the long-term answer there. I think if Wentz struggles like he did 2 years ago when he was on the Eagles, and it was pretty clear that the at one point MVP candidate Carson Wentz was no longer, I think Sam Howell has a more realistic path to boosting his fantasy value than Malik Willis. So I actually have Howell 4 now, Willis 5. I don't know if that's me being just too caught up in what Tannehill is and thinking he's good. But for me, the Malik Willis getting round 3 draft capital kind of signaled that it was over for him. And that the NFL was like, this is a project that we do not want until the third round. So maybe I'm just being too hard on him, but it's someone where I thought there were pretty glaring red flags. And like, I had a few tweets where I was basically like, if I was an NFL GM, I am not staking my franchise on Malik Willis in round 1. When he wasn't even that efficient at Liberty. And a lot of people got angry. And they were like, I cannot believe you're doing this. Malik Willis is so good. And then when the draft capital was even worse than I thought. I mean, in round 2, I was like, you know what? A team should probably just take Malik Willis. And when every team passed on it. No teams traded back into the second to get him. I kind of thought, wow, he has Trey Lance, if not better tools. And the NFL just said no until the middle of the third round. So for me, that was why I was just kind of like, wow, this is such an indictment on him. I can't draft Malik Willis anymore.
It is. It's, I have him currently behind Matt Corral, and I want to put Desmond Ridder ahead of him, but I didn't like Desmond Ridder as the prospect at all. And I have Sam Howell way lower than I probably should. I don't think any of the, here's my thing, Josh. The reality is these guys, they don't have, Kenny Pickett has a tarmac for a runway. Like literally, like go to the airport, that's his runway. If Kenny Pickett starts every game this year and fails miserably, he's probably going to start next year. Malik Willis, Desmond Ridder, or Matt Corral, they go in and they get 2 to 3 games to do their thing and they stink, it's over. There is the third round picks with no money invested in them, and they're on teams that are probably outside of Tennessee. Well, first of all, Malik's not going to get on the field unless Tannehill gets hurt, period. They might do some stuff where they throw him out there to run the Wildcat, right? Like, he goes in for a play. We even saw the Las Vegas Raiders throw Marcus Mariota in there to pick up a third down here and there. But if Matt Corral gets an opportunity, which I think he will, I think Matt Corral and Desmond Ridder will both play at some point this year because Sam Darnold and Marcus Mariota are not very good. But they don't have the leash and the leeway of a first-round pick. I don't even think they have the leash and the leeway of Jalen Hurts. If one of those guys has... Jalen Hurts started the final 4 games of his rookie season, and I believe he was about 50% in those games. 2 games, he looked pretty good, and then 2 games, he was terrible. If that's those guys this season, I will guarantee you they draft Anthony Richardson or Bryce Young or CJ Stroud or Will Levis in 2023, and their opportunity as a starting quarterback in the NFL is all but evaporated. I mean, it is gone. There is no leeway with those guys, no sort of wiggle room. I just don't really have any interest in any of them. And if I did, Josh, the moment Matt Corral is named the starting quarterback for Carolina for week 13 because Darnold stinks,
your guy,
I am trading him immediately because he's a third round pick. And I don't even want to wait to see if he hits or if he fails because it's just not worth it. I will take the second rounder and be very, very happy that I can get out of Corral, Willis, Ridder, or Sam Howell. I don't think any of those guys will be the long-term answer for their respective franchises.
I kind of like that. Go out on some just bashing these quarterbacks.
Oh, there it is. I like it.
Yeah, as you were talking, I was like, that's a strong ending. I wanted to ask about there Zach Wilson. We can just throw this one in the outtakes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Zach Wilson's interesting. If he sucks this year, is he done? I always wonder what teams think, where I feel like Fields, he does feel like he has a little more of the leash because they're not surrounding him with weapons. Zach Wilson, yeah. I kind of think this is do or die in Dynasty. I want to see if you had that feeling as well. Like I think he's someone where you want some. I actually think, so I don't like Zach Wilson. Neither of us do.
I don't either.
I actually think you want one or two share. If you play in a lot of leagues, I think you want one or two Zach Wilson shares. I think he's probably going to bust, but I think there's the potential based on what they're doing as an organization, who he's surrounded by, that he just takes off this year. I think it's very low probability, like 25-30%. I think it's most likely bust. And they're like, wow, we surrounded you with Breece Hall. You have Garrett Wilson. You have Elijah Moore. Yeah. You have Corey Davis. We gave you 2 tight ends. You still have Michael Carter. So do you think this is kind of the... I feel like he and Jalen Hurts, they're almost in the same spot.
Well, here's the benefit of Hurts and the detriment of Wilson. If Wilson is bad, the Jets are going to be in the contention for a top pick again. If he's bad, they're going to be terrible, mm-hmm. and they're going to be a top 3 drafting team. If Hurts is bad, I don't think he... I think Hurts can be a bad passer and still limp Philadelphia to like a middle of the road team.
Last year.
You know what I mean?
He was a below average quarterback last year. Happened last year.
And they still went to the playoffs. And they've improved their defense. They have more weapons. I don't know if they're even going to be in a position to get a viable rookie replacement. The Jets will. And if the Jets are on the clock at 102, 103 next year, and C.J. Stroud is on the board, Anthony Richardson is there, I don't think they'd be able to pass him. I don't think they'd be able to pass on that quarterback. So I think I don't want to say he's done, but it looks very Daniel Jones-esque. It looks very much like Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold, where they know they don't want this guy, and they're not going to pick up the fifth-year option, and they're going to find a replacement. If he can't make it happen with these weapons, then he's just terrible. He's just terrible, man. I have to ask you a question because my patrons wanted to know. They're talking about the cutoff point, Larky, for these wide receivers, and like, where's the wide receiver range that you'd be ready to trade out of these rookies for like a veteran? So like a DJ Moore. Would you rather Sky Moore or DJ Moore? Would you rather J-Mo, Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, or a DJ Moore? Like, where's your pivot point with these like rookies to veterans? And I know that's a hard question to fucking answer, but they were like, please ask Josh this. Like, ask Larky.
They probably know I love DJ Moore. Oh, that's tough.
Well, who would you rather have? I'm just going to put fire to ass.
I think I would take DJ Moore. Would you rather
have any over all of these rookie wide receivers?
Yes. I think DJ Moore, he's 24 or either just turned 25.
Something like that.
I think he's young enough that he's still multiple years away from hitting his like true prime and potential decline. And I think DJ Moore has shown that the two metrics that I look at the most are target share and air yard share. And he's basically he's a top five, top seven wide receiver when you look at those two metrics together. So I get it. The quarterback situation's horrible. They did extend him. I think Carolina has no plan, but I want one of these players to be DJ Moore. I don't think any of them are going to be DJ Moore. It's just hard to ask for someone that's going to basically be top five in target share and top five in air yard share on their team. I'm playing in one league and I'm risking like my life on that league, I stick with DJ Moore.
Right.
If I'm a portfolio player, I think Burks and London are the two that I'd be willing to do it for, just because they have the size, they have the draft capital, mega producers. So those.
So let me ask you this. Let me give you a couple of rapid fires, because these are some Terry McLaurin or Treylon or Drake London. McLaurin or Burks or London? Which one?
London or Burks. I have them basically neck and neck in the rankings. I think it's take or pick.
You'd have either of those over Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, I would. Terry McLaurin was very inconsistent last year. I thought there were some concerns.
Very.
The other thing is, so even though McLaurin's not much older than Moore, for how long he's been in the league, like, McLaurin was a really old prospect. And I just don't think, like, he inherently just can't. He's like Calvin Ridley, where Calvin Ridley has like a top five season and his dynasty value goes up, but it's still capped because of just how old they are for their level. And there's just something about the prospect profile or being old that goes with you. It's like with Deebo Samuel, and I get it, like, there's some injury concerns, but him being like a 23 or 23 and a half year old rookie, it's still with him today, where people look at Deebo and, I mean, like, if DJ Moore had 20 fantasy points a game like Deebo this past year, he'd be the clear wide receiver three in Dynasty behind Jefferson and Jamar Chase. That didn't happen, though. And, like, yeah, there's some injury concerns. The role is a little weird, but it's also that he was an old player for his level. So that's why McLaurin, yeah, I think I have DJ Moore over McLaurin. I would take Burks or London. Right now I have London over Burks purely because London just had such ridiculous volume all three seasons. Burks really had the ridiculous volume his third year. So I lean London a touch. I think they're both great landing spots, but like, yeah. I truly do not care between London and Burks.
Deontay or those two? Deontay Johnson or those two?
Oh my God.
It's a conversation. It's a conversation. That's all I needed to fucking hear. I got one more for you, Larky. Devontae Smith or those two?
I'll take these two.
Over Smith, easy.
Yeah, it's that A.J. Brown is going to be there long term. And it's not that I don't think two guys can eat. Like, we see Chase and Higgins, they're both eating. But I think that's kind of a rare case where two guys can be quite that good. And you still see it with Higgins. Like, his value is a little bit depressed. He's really young. He gave you like 15 or 16 fantasy points a game this past year. And people still aren't like, oh, this is an elite dynasty asset. There's just something right about being the number two there. I think there's a chance he just out targets AJ Brown, but I think that's kind of low. I don't think Devonta Smith's going to be a really good receiver for a really long time, but I don't quite think he has the true league winning upside that a Burks or a London has.
Just a good receiver, right? Just, you think he's just going to be a good receiver.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like who I'd compare him to in terms of fantasy. Like, he, where it's just like, this guy is a, it's like Jarvis Landry.
Like Jarvis Landry, Robert Woods.
Yeah, Robert Woods is a good one. Yeah, like they can give you a lot of good, really good seasons, but you're never going to be like, oh, I just won my league because of
with Robert
Woods or Landry or Smith. But I think there's a scenario where you're like, I truly, this title, thank you, Treylon Burks. Thank you, Drake London.
And do you think those two are a gap for you in your rankings between like J-Mo, Garrett Wilson, Watson, Dotson, those guys? Is there a gap between London and Burks? Because those are my top two receivers as well. London and Burks are my one and two in the class.
So I actually waffled really hard with this one. So I have Breece Hall, then I have London, Burks, and they're in tier 1B. I have Garrett Wilson in that tier, and then Sky Moore starts the next tier. So Sky Moore very high up for me. Like, I kind of outlined kind of why I like him earlier. Garrett Wilson, I think I might bump him down to the Sky Moore tier. And it's because of the lack of confidence in Zach Wilson. And it's because I think I saw someone talking about this on Twitter, like a good thought experiment. If Garrett Wilson has the rookie year Elijah Moore does, that's a success. And he's playing on that team with Elijah Moore, who I think right now, I would say Elijah Moore is better than Garrett Wilson. Even if I like Garrett Wilson more as a prospect, I think what Moore did as a rookie is pretty phenomenal, that they funneled an offense through him for like six straight weeks. And with the lack of faith in Wilson, with thinking that today Elijah Moore is better, I know it's tough. Like, Wilson was my pre-draft wide receiver one. I think there's a lot to like there. But he is smaller, which is a knock on his potential upside. And I think he went to a pretty bad situation. So he's a tough one. Like, some minutes I think he's closer to Sky Moore than Burks and London. Other times I think he's closer to Burks and London than Moore. So that for me is just I don't know if you have thoughts on that, but that's a really tough one for me, where I think I could be talked into either one, like put him in that tier, I guess, or the tier below.
My thing with Wilson, and it would have been any receiver that landed in New York, is the fact that they so desperately wanted somebody, like the entire offseason. Like, it was rumors with Debo, it was Tyreek Hill. Then it was, do they take a receiver at four? And then they're essentially the pick of the litter outside of Drake London, who I think would have been their pick if he was there at 10. They go Garrett Wilson. It seemed like, I don't know what, I guess to me it signifies they're at least going to give him the shot to be the guy. They'll give, now, will he succeed at that? If you're asking me, Ray, you got to pick Garrett Wilson or Elijah Moore as prospects. I had Garrett Wilson higher, but man, when you see what Elijah Moore did as a rookie, it just, like, why draft a wide receiver at 10 if you had that type of confidence in Elijah? Especially when we saw the Jets trade back up in the first and get a Jermaine Johnson, and they could have gotten another receiver later. Like, they sat at 10 and took one. And that's why, for me, I'm like, as much as I like Elijah, it's hard to ignore Wilson. Now, the Jets are going to be interesting, man. Corey Davis is going to play. They brought back Braxton Berrios. Like, somebody's not going to be on the field. And then I don't think Zach Wilson is good enough to support all those guys. So it's just, it's a weird spot, man. I think there could be an opportunity to buy low on Garrett Wilson when Elijah Moore goes out there and is the guy, and people are kind of panicked. I mean, Treylon Burks, the fact that we liked Tennessee as the landing spot when they had A.J. Brown, and now they trade A.J. Brown away and replace him with a less, like a younger version of himself. Like, he's walking into 100 targets as well, Larky. He should. With the best quarterback of all the rookie wide receivers, not named Christian Watson, of course. I mean, all the rookie wide receivers that matter, he's got the best quarterback in Ryan Tannehill. He's better than Mariota. He's better than Zach Wilson. He's better than Jared Goff. I mean, Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, of course, but Tannehill probably better than Jameis Winston. I mean, he's going to have every opportunity to thrive in that offense, and who knows how Robert Woods at 30 years old, how his knee's going to respond to ACL tear. So I love Tennessee for Treylon. It feels like a Tennessee pick, you know?
Yeah. When they trade away Brown, when they got Treylon Burks, some people were like, you're making it too simple. And I was like, how am I making it too simple by going, the ceiling comp for Treylon Burks was A.J. Brown. They had A.J. Brown. They got rid of him and took Treylon Burks. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to get all the targets that A.J. Brown got, but it's clear that they know how to use this player in a fantasy-relevant way. We both think Tannehill's good. I don't think either of us thinks Robert Woods is a threat. Nick Westbrook's not a threat. This is basically the Falcons depth chart all over again, where it's after Robert Woods, what, Nick Westbrook? Dez Fitzpatrick? Once again, it starts to sound like one of those USFL depth charts.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's really hard to see him not succeeding. We had that comment come out today from Vrabel where he said, we're going to force feed Treylon.
Oh, that came. Wait, I missed that.
I mean, that's probably an exaggeration. He said some crazy stuff. Basically, but still, it's kind of what I expected. It's like if you got rid of A.J. Brown, you have nobody else at receiver. You want to win as a team. You're going to have to feed Treylon. You can't just give Derrick Henry 30 touches a game. It broke him last year. Now he's a year older with a metal plate in his foot.
They're not going to have a chance. I mean, they're not going to have a choice, right? Like, again, you just said it. They're a playoff contending team, devoid their alpha wide receiver, and they just spent the 18th overall pick on Treylon Burks. Like, I'm just asking you, Larky, am I insane for projecting Drake London to have 125 targets this year? Is that crazy to think? I'm basing it on.
I'm gonna pull up my projections. I think I have him a touch under that, but it's not far off. I've got him at 107, but I think that could be conservative. But that's kind of like my baseline. I like to be a little conservative with the baseline. I've got Pitts at 128. London at 107.
Okay. Well, if you got Pitts at 128, then that's fine. Because I'm thinking London, and I'm, again, terrible to just use. Well, look at what Devonta Smith had. But, I mean, Smith had 104. I just don't envision a world in which London is sub-100 targets as a rookie.
Yeah, I think he's going to be over.
They're just going to force feed him and Kyle Pitts the ball. Like, they have nobody else on that offense. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't quite
think. And if he's good, when Ridley comes back, if they keep him, he's the two. Ridley will be the two to Drake London's one. Mm-hmm. Like, if they keep him and he comes back.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think he's quite going to have the Devonta Smith rookie season because I think Pitts is much better than Goddard.
Yeah.
But I do think if I had to choose, if you said that I'm getting 15 healthy games from Drake London or 16 healthy games, I'd probably take the over on the 100 targets.
Okay. All right. Well, I went a little longer than I was supposed to, but yeah. Oh, well, that was great, great banter and great conversation.
That was good stuff.
I guess I can stop my recording.
You need Jeez. To. Yeah, I was slowing it down because you were like, I have to go at an hour. And I was like, okay. There we go. Yeah, I'm going to bounce. We got an air fryer that just arrived today. We're about to check it out. I'm hyped.